Chapter 45. Blade Master. The rising sun pushed its crimson edge above the horizon and sent long shadows down the cobblestone streets of Falma toward the harbor. A sea breeze bent the smoke of breakfast cook fires inland from the chimneys. Only the early risers were already out of doors, their breath making steam in the morning cold. Compared to the crowds that would fill the streets in another hour, the town seemed nearly empty. Sitting on an upended barrel in front of a still-closed ironmonger's shop, Nynaeve warmed her hands under her arms and surveyed her army. Min sat on a doorstep across the way, swathed in her Shan-Chan cloak and eating a wrinkled plum, and Elaine in her fleece coat huddled at the edge of an alley just down the street from her. A large sack pilfered from the docks lay neatly folded beside Min. "My army," Nynaeve thought grimly, "but there isn't anybody else." She caught sight of a Suldam and a Damani climbing the street, a yellow-haired woman wearing the bracelet and a dark woman the collar, both yawning sleepily. The few Falmen sharing the street with them averted their eyes and gave them a wide berth. As far as she could see, down toward the harbor there was not another Shan-Chan. She did not turn her head the other way. Instead, she stretched and shrugged as if working cold shoulders before settling back as she had been. Min tossed her half-eaten plum aside, glanced casually up the street, and leaned back on the doorpost. The way was clear there, too, or she would have put her hands on her knees. Min had started rubbing her hands nervously, and Nynaeve realized that Elaine was now bouncing eagerly on her toes. "If they give us away, I'll thump both their heads." But she knew if they were discovered, it would be the Shan-Chan who would say what happened to all three of them. She was all too aware that she had no real notion of whether what she planned would work or not. It could easily be her own failure that would give them away. Once again, she resolved that if anything went wrong, she would somehow pull attention to herself while Min and Elaine escaped. She had told them to run if anything went wrong, and let them think she would run too. What she would do then, she did not know. "Except I won't let them take me alive. Please, Light, not that." Suldam and Damani came up the street until they were bracketed by the three waiting women. A dozen Falmen walked wide of the linked pair. Nynaeve gathered all of her anger, leashed ones and leash holders. They had put their filthy collar on Egwene's neck, and they would put it on hers and Elaine's if they could. She had made Min tell her how Suldam enforced their will. She was sure Min had kept some back, the worst, but what she told was enough to heat Nynaeve to white-hot fury. In an instant, a white blossom on a black thorny branch had opened to Light, to Saidar, and the one power filled her. She knew there was a glow around her, for those who could see it. The pale-skinned Suldam gave a start, and the dark Damani's mouth fell open, but Nynaeve gave them no chance. It was only a trickle of the power that she channeled, but she cracked it, a whip snapping a dust mote out of the air. The silver collar sprang open and clattered to the cobblestones. Nynaeve heaved a sigh of relief, even as she leaped to her feet. The Suldam stared at the fallen collar as if at a poisonous snake. The Damani put a shaking hand to her throat, but before the woman in the lightning-marked dress had time to move, the Damani turned and punched her in the face. The Suldam's knees buckled, and she almost fell. "Good for you!" Elaine shouted. She was already running forward, too, and so was Min. Before any of them reached the two women, the Damani took one startled look around, then ran as hard as she could. "We won't hurt you," Elaine called after her. "We are friends."
"Be quiet,"
Nynaeve hissed. She produced a handful of rags from her pocket and ruthlessly stuffed them into the gaping mouth of the still staggering Suldam. Min hastily shook out the sack in a cloud of dust and plunged it over the Suldam's head, shrouding the woman to the waist.
"We are already attracting too much attention."
It was true, and yet not entirely true. The four of them stood in a rapidly emptying street, but the people who had decided to be elsewhere were avoiding looking at them. Nynaeve had been counting on that, people doing their best to ignore anything that had to do with Shan-Chen, to gain them a few moments. They would talk eventually, but in whispers. It might take hours for the Shan-Chan to learn anything had happened. The hooded woman began to struggle, making rag-muffled shouts from the sack,
But Nynaeve and Min threw their arms around her and wrestled her toward a nearby alley. The leash and collar trailed across the cobblestones behind them, clinking. "Pick it up," Nynaeve snapped at Elaine. "It won't bite you." Elaine took a deep breath, then gathered the silver metal gingerly, as if she feared it very well might. Nynaeve felt some sympathy, but not much. Everything rested on each of them doing as they had planned. The Suldam kicked and tried to throw herself free, but between them, Nynaeve and Min forced her along, down the alley into another slightly wider passage behind houses, to yet another alley, and at last into a rough wooden shed that had apparently once housed two horses, by the stalls. Few could afford to keep horses since the Shan Chan came, and in a day of Nynaeve's watching, no one had gone near it. The interior had a musty dustiness that spoke of abandonment. As soon as they were inside, Elaine dropped the silver leash and wiped her hands on some straw. Nynaeve channeled another trickle and the bracelet fell to the dirt floor. The Suldam squalled and hurled herself about. "Ready?" Nynaeve asked. The other two nodded, and they yanked the sacking off their prisoner. The Suldam wheezed, blue eyes teary from dust, but her red face was red as much from anger as from the sack. She darted for the door, but they caught her in the first step. She was not weak, yet they were three, and when they were done, the Suldam was stripped to her shift and lying in one of the stalls, bound hand and foot with stout cord, with another piece of cord to keep her from forcing the gag out. Soothing a puffy lip, Min eyed the lightning-paneled dress and soft boots they had laid out. "It might fit you, Nynaeve. It won't fit Elaine or me." Elaine was picking straw out of her hair. "I can see that. You were never a choice anyway, not really. They know you too well." Nynaeve hurriedly removed her own clothes. She tossed them aside and donned the Suldam's dress. Min helped with the buttons. Nynaeve wiggled her toes in the boots. They were a little tight. The dress was tight, too, across the bosom, and loose elsewhere. The hem hung almost to the ground, lower than Suldam wore them, but the fit would have been even worse on any of the others. Snatching up the bracelet, she took a deep breath and closed it around her left wrist. The ends merged, and it seemed solid. It did not feel like anything except a bracelet. She had been afraid that it would. "Get the dress, Elaine." They had dyed a pair of dresses, one of hers and one of Elaine's, to the gray Damani wore, or as close as they could manage, and hidden them here. Elaine did not move except to stare at the open collar and lick her lips. "Elaine, you have to wear it. Too many of them have seen Min for her to do it. I would have worn it if this dress had fit you instead." She thought she would have gone mad if she had had to wear the collar. That was why she could not make her voice sharp with Elaine now. "I know," Elaine sighed. "I just wish I knew more of what it does to you." She drew her red-gold hair out of the way. "Min, help me, please." Min began undoing the buttons down the back of her dress. Nynaeve managed to pick up the silver collar without flinching. "There is one way to find out." With only a moment of hesitation, she bent and snapped it around the neck of the Suldam. "She deserves it if anyone does," she told herself firmly. "She might be able to tell us something useful anyway." The blue-eyed woman glanced at the leash trailing from her neck to Nynaeve's wrist, then glared up at her contemptuously. "It doesn't work that way," Min said, but Nynaeve barely heard. She was aware of the other woman, aware of what she was feeling, cord digging into her ankles and into her wrists behind her back, the rank fish taste of the rags in her mouth, straw pricking her through the thin cloth of her shift. It was not as if she, Nynaeve, felt these things, but in her head was a lump of sensations that she knew belonged to the Suldam. She swallowed, trying to ignore them. They would not go away, and addressed the bound woman. "I won't hurt you if you answer my questions truthfully. We aren't Shan Chan." "But if you lie to me," she lifted the leash threateningly. The woman's shoulders shook, and her mouth curled around the gag in a sneer. It took Nynaeve a moment to realize the Suldam was laughing. Her mouth tightened, but then a thought came to her. That bundle of sensation inside her head seemed to be everything physical that the other woman felt. Experimentally, she tried adding to it. Eyes suddenly bulging out of her head, the Suldam gave a cry that the gag only partially stopped. Fanning her hands behind her as if trying to ward off something, she humped through the straw in a vain effort to escape. Nynaeve gaped and hastily rid herself of the extra feelings she had added. The Suldam sagged, weeping. What did you do to her? Elaine asked faintly. Min only stared, her mouth hanging open. Nynaeve answered gruffly. The same thing Shiriam did to you when you threw a cup at Marith. Light, but this is a filthy thing. Elaine gulped loudly.
Oh.
But an Eidam isn't supposed to work that way, Min said. They always claimed it won't work on any woman who cannot channel. I do not care how it is supposed to work, so long as it does. Nynaeve seized the silver metal leash right where it joined the collar and pulled the woman up enough to look her in the eyes. Frightened eyes, she saw. You listen to me and listen well. I want answers, and if I don't get them, I'll make you think I've had the hide off you. Stark terror rolled across the woman's face, and Nynaeve's stomach heaved as she suddenly realized the Suldam had taken her literally. If she thinks I can, it's because she knows. That is what these leashes are for. She took firm hold of herself to stop from clawing the bracelet off her wrist. Instead, she hardened her face. Are you ready to answer me? Or do you need more convincing? The frantic head shaking was answer enough. When Nynaeve removed the gag, the woman only paused to swallow once before babbling,
I will not report you, I swear it. Only take this from my neck. I have gold. Take it. I swear I will never tell anyone.
Be quiet, Nynaeve snapped, and the woman shut her mouth immediately. What is your name?
Sita. Please, I will answer you, but please take it off. If anyone sees it on me.
Sita's eyes rolled down to stare at the leash, then squeezed shut.
Please,
she whispered. Nynaeve realized something. She could never make Elaine wear that collar.
Best we get on with it, Elaine said firmly. She was down to her shift, too, now.
Give me a moment to put this other dress on and...
Put your own clothes back on, Nynaeve said.
Someone has to pretend to be a Damani, Elaine said, or we will never reach Egwene. That dress fits you and it cannot be Min. That leaves me.
I said, put your clothes on. We have somebody to be our leashed one. Nynaeve tugged at the leash that held Sita, and the Suldam gasped.
No, no, please, if anyone sees me.
She cut off at Nynaeve's cold stare. As far as I am concerned, you are worse than a murderer, worse than a dark friend. I can't think of anything worse than you. The fact that I have to wear this thing on my wrist to be the same as you for even an hour sickens me. So if you think there is anything I'll balk at doing to you, think again. You don't want to be seen? Good. Neither do we. No one really looks at a Damani, though. As long as you keep your head down the way a leashed one is supposed to, no one will even notice you. But you had better do the best you can to make sure the rest of us aren't noticed either. If we are, you surely will be seen. And if that is not enough to hold you, I promise you I'll make you curse the first kiss your mother ever gave your father. Do we understand each other?
Yes, Sita said faintly. I swear it.
Nynaeve had to remove the bracelet in order for them to slide Elaine's gray-dyed dress down the leash and over Sita's head. It did not fit the woman well, being loose at the bosom and tight across the hips, but Nynaeve's would have been as bad, and too short besides. Nynaeve hoped people really did not look at Damani. She put the bracelet back on reluctantly. Elaine gathered up Nynaeve's clothes, wrapped the other dyed dress around them, and made a bundle for a woman in farm clothes to be carrying as she followed a Suldam and a Damani.
Gawain will eat his heart out when he hears about this, she said, and laughed. It sounded forced.
Nynaeve looked at her closely, then at Min. It was time for the dangerous part. Are you ready? Elaine's smile faded.
I am ready.
Ready, Min said curtly.
Where are you, we, going? Sita said, quickly adding, if I may ask.
Into the lion's den, Elaine told her.
To dance with the Dark One, Min said.
Nynaeve sighed and shook her head.
What they are trying to say is, we are going where all the Damani are kept and we intend to free one of them.
Sita was still gaping in astonishment when they hustled her out of the shed.
Bael Doman watched the rising sun from the deck of his ship. The docks were already beginning to bustle, though the streets leading up from the harbor stood largely empty. A gull perched on a piling stared at him. Gulls had pitiless eyes.
"Are you sure about this, Captain?" Yaren asked. "If the Seanchan wonder what we're all doing aboard..."
"You just make certain there do be an axe near every mooring line," Doman said curtly. "And Yaren? Do any man try to cut a line before those women are aboard, I will split his skull."
"And what if they don't come, Captain? What if it's Seanchan soldiers instead?"
"Settle your bowels, man. If soldiers come, I'll make a run for the harbor mouth, and the light have mercy on us all. But until soldiers do come, I mean to wait for those women. Now go look as if you are no doing anything."
Doman turned back to peering up into the town toward where the Damani were held. His fingers drummed a nervous tattoo on the railing. The breeze from the sea brought the smell of breakfast cook fires to Rand's nose and tried to flap at his moth-eaten cloak, but he held it closed with one hand as Red neared the town. There had not been a coat to fit him in the clothes they had found, and he thought it best to keep the fine silver embroidery on his sleeves and the herons on his collar hidden. The Seanchan attitude toward conquered people carrying weapons might not extend to those with heron-marked swords either. The first shadows of morning stretched out ahead of him. He could just see Huron riding in among the wagon yards and horse lots. Only one or two men moved among the lines of merchant wagons, and they wore the long aprons of wheelwrights or blacksmiths. Ingtar, the first in, was already out of sight. Perrin and Matt followed behind Rand at spaced intervals. He did not look back to check on them. There was not supposed to be anything to connect them. 5 men coming into Falma at an early hour, but not together. The horse lots surrounded him, horses already crowding the fences waiting to be fed. Yuren put his head out from between 2 stables, their doors still closed and barred, saw Rand and motioned to him before ducking back. Rand turned the bay stallion that way. Huron stood holding his horse by the reins. He had on one of the long vests instead of his coat, and despite the heavy cloak that hid his short sword and sword breaker, he shivered with the cold.
"Lord Ingtar's back there," he said, nodding down the narrow passage. "He says we'll leave the horses here and go the rest of the way on foot."
As Rand dismounted, the sniffer added,
"Fane went right down that street, Lord Rand. I can almost smell it from here."
Rand led Red down the way to where Ingtar had already tied his own horse behind the stable. The Shinaran did not look very much a lord in a dirty fleece coat with holes worn through the leather in several places, and his sword looked odd belted over it. His eyes had a feverish intensity. Tying Red alongside Ingtar's stallion, Rand hesitated over his saddlebags. He had not been able to leave the banner behind. He did not think any of the soldiers would have gone into the bags, but he could not say the same for Varen, nor predict what she would do if she found the banner. Still, it made him uneasy to have it with him. He decided to leave the saddlebags tied behind his saddle. Matt joined them, and a few moments later, Huron came with Perrin. Matt wore baggy trousers stuffed into the tops of his boots, and Perrin his too short cloak. Rand thought they all looked like villainous beggars, but they had all passed largely unnoticed in the villages.
"Now," Ingtar said, "let us see what we see."
They strolled out to the dirt street as if they had no particular destination in mind, talking among themselves and ambled past the wagon yards onto sloping cobblestone streets. Rand was not sure what he himself said, much less anyone else. Ingtar's plan had been for them to look like any other group of men walking together, but there were all too few people out of doors. 5 men made a crowd on those cold morning streets. They walked in a bunch, but it was Huron who led them, sniffing the air and turning up this street and down that. The rest turned when he did, as if that was what they had intended all along.
"He's crisscrossed this town," Huron muttered, grimacing. "His smell is everywhere, and it stinks so it's hard to tell old from new. At least I know he's still here. Some of it cannot be older than a day or two, I'm sure. I am sure, he added less doubtfully. A few more people began to appear. Here a fruit peddler setting his wares on tables, there a fellow hurrying along with a big roll of parchments under his arm and a sketchboard slung across his back, a knife sharpener oiling the shaft of his grinding wheel on its barrow. Two women walked by, headed the other way, one with downcast eyes and a silver collar around her neck, the other in a dress worked with lightning bolts, holding a coiled silver leash. Rand's breath caught. It was an effort not to look back at them.
Was that?
Matt's eyes were open wide, staring out of the hollows of his eye sockets.
Was that a Damani?
That is the way they were described, Ingtar said curtly. Huron, are we going to walk every street in this shadow-cursed town?
He's been everywhere, Lord Ingtar, Huron said. His stench is everywhere.
They had come into an area where the stone houses were 3 and 4 stories high, as big as inns. They rounded a corner, and Rand was taken aback by the sight of a score of Shan Chen soldiers standing guard in front of a big house on one side of the street, and by the sight of 2 women in lightning-marked dresses talking on the doorsteps of another across from it. A banner flapped in the wind over the house the soldiers protected, a golden hawk clutching lightning bolts. Nothing marked out the house where the women talked except themselves. The officer's armor was resplendent in red and black and gold, his helmet gilded and painted to look like a spider's head. Then Rand saw the 2 big leathery-skinned shapes, crouched among the soldiers, and missed a step.
Grom.
There was no mistaking those wedge-shaped heads with their 3 eyes.
They can't be.
Perhaps he was really asleep, and this was all a nightmare.
Maybe we haven't even left for Falma yet.
The others stared at the beasts as they walked past the guarded house.
What in the name of light are they? Matt asked.
Huron's eyes seemed as big as his face.
Lord Rand, they're... those are...
It doesn't matter, Rand said. After a moment, Huron nodded.
We are here for the horn, Ingtar said, not to stare at Shan Chen monsters. Concentrate on finding Fane, Huron.
The soldiers barely glanced at them. The street ran straight down to the round harbor. Rand could see ships anchored down there, tall, square-looking ships with high masts, small in that distance.
He's been here a lot,
Huron scrubbed at his nose with the back of his hand.
The street stinks of layer on layer of him.
I think he might have been here as late as yesterday, Lord Ingtar. Maybe last night.
Matt suddenly clutched his coat with both hands.
It's in there, he whispered.
He turned around and walked backwards, peering at the tall house with the banner.
The dagger is in there. I didn't even notice it before, because of those things, but I can feel it.
Perrin poked a finger in his ribs. Well, stop that before they start wondering why you're goggling at them like a fool. Rand glanced over his shoulder. The officer was looking after them. Matt turned around sullenly.
Are we just going to keep on walking? It's in there, I tell you.
The horn is what we are after, Ingtar growled. I mean to find Fane and make him tell me where it is.
He did not slow down. Matt said nothing, but his entire face was a plea.
I have to find Fane too, Rand thought. I have to.
But when he looked at Matt's face, he said,
Ingtar, if the dagger is in that house, Fane likely is too. I can't see him letting the dagger or the horn, either one, far out of his sight.
Ingtar stopped. After a moment, he said,
It could be, but we will never know from out here.
We could watch for him to come out, Rand said. If he comes out at this time of the morning, then he spent the night there. And I'll wager where he sleeps is where the horn is. If he does come out, we can be back to Varen by midday and have a plan made before nightfall.
I do not mean to wait for Varen, Ingtar said.
And neither will I wait for night. I've waited too long already. I mean to have the horn in my hands before the sun sets again.
But we don't know, Ingtar. I know the dagger is in there, Matt said.
And Huron says Fane was here last night.
Ingtar overrode Huron's attempts to qualify that.
It is the first time you have been willing to say anything closer than a day or two.
We are going to take back the horn now. Now.
How? Rand said.
The officer was no longer watching them, but there were still at least 20 soldiers in front of the building, and a pair of Grom.
This is madness,
There can't be Grom here.
Thinking it did not make the beasts disappear, though. There seems to be gardens behind all these houses, Ingtar said, looking around thoughtfully. If one of those alleys runs by a garden wall... Sometimes men are so busy guarding their front, they neglect their back. Come.
He headed straight for the nearest narrow passage between two of the tall houses. Bjorn and Matt trotted right after him.
Rand exchanged looks with Perrin. His curly-haired friend gave a resigned shrug, and they followed too. The alley was barely wider than their shoulders, but it ran between high garden walls until it crossed another alley big enough for a pushbarrow or small cart. That was cobblestoned, too, but only the backs of buildings looked down on it, shuttered windows and expanses of stone, and the high back walls of gardens overtopped by nearly leafless branches. Ingtar led them along that alley until they were opposite the waving banner. Taking his steel-backed gauntlets from under his coat, he put them on and leaped up to catch the top of the wall, then pulled himself up enough to peek over. He reported in a low monotone,
"Trees. Flower beds. Walks. There isn't a soul to be... Wait. A guard. One man. He isn't even wearing his helmet. Count to 50, then follow me."
He swung a boot to the top of the wall and rolled inside, disappearing before Rand could say a word. Matt began to count slowly. Rand held his breath. Perrin fingered his axe, and Huron gripped the hilts of his weapons.
50.
Huron scrambled up and over the wall before the word was well out of Matt's mouth. Perrin went right beside him. Rand thought Matt might need some help. He looked so pale and drawn, but he gave no sign of it as he scrambled up. The stone wall provided plenty of handholds, and moments later, Rand was crouched on the inside with Matt and Perrin and Huron. The garden was in the grip of deep autumn, flower beds empty except for a few evergreen shrubs, tree branches nearly bare. The wind that rippled the banner stirred dust across the flagstone walks. For a moment, Rand could not find Ingtar. Then he saw the Shinaran flat against the back wall of the house, motioning them on with sword in hand. Rand ran in a crouch, more conscious of the windows blankly peering down from the house than of his friends running beside him. It was a relief to press himself against the house beside Ingtar. Matt kept muttering to himself,
"It's in there, I can feel it." "Where's the guard?" Rand whispered.
"Dead," Ingtar said. "The man was overconfident. He never even tried to raise a cry. I hid his body under one of those bushes."
Rand stared at him.
The Shan-Chan was overconfident?
The only thing that kept him from going back right then was Matt's anguished murmurs.
"We are almost there,"
Ingtar sounded as if he were speaking to himself, too.
"Almost there. Come."
Rand drew his sword as they started up the back steps. He was aware of Huron unlimbering his short-bladed sword and notched swordbreaker, and Perrin reluctantly drawing his axe from the loop of his belt. The hallway inside was narrow. A half-open door to their right smelled like a kitchen. Several people were moving about in that room. There was an indistinguishable sound of voices and occasionally the soft clatter of a pot lid. Ingtar motioned Matt to lead, and they crept by the door. Rand watched the narrowing opening until they were around the next corner. A slender young woman with dark hair came out of a door ahead of them, carrying a tray with one cup. They all froze. She turned the other way without looking in their direction. Rand's eyes widened. Her long white robe was all but transparent. She vanished around another corner.
"Did you see that?" Matt said hoarsely. "You could see right through."
Ingtar clapped a hand over Matt's mouth and whispered,
"Keep your mind on why we are here. Now find it. Find the horn for me."
Matt pointed to a narrow set of winding stairs. They climbed a flight, and he led them toward the front of the house. The furnishings in the hallways were sparse and seemed all curves. Here and there, a tapestry hung on a wall or a folding screen stood against it, each painted with a few birds on branches or a flower or two. A river flowed across one screen, but aside from rippling water and narrow strips of riverbank, the rest of it was blank. All around them, Rand could hear the sounds of people stirring, slippers scuffing on the floor, soft murmurs of speech. He did not see anyone, but he could imagine it all too well, someone stepping into the hall to see five slinking men with weapons in their hands, shouting an alarm.
"In there,"
Matt whispered, pointing to a big pair of sliding doors ahead, carved handholds their only ornamentation.
"At least the dagger is."
Ingtar looked at Huron. The sniffer slid the doors open, and Ingtar leaped through with his sword ready. There was no one there. Rand and the others hurried inside, and Huron quickly closed the doors behind them. Painted screens hid all the walls and any other doors, and veiled the light coming through windows that had to overlook the street. At one end of the big room stood a tall circular cabinet. At the other was a small table, the lone chair on the carpet turned to face it. Rand heard Ingtar gasp, but he only felt like heaving a sigh of relief. The curling golden horn of Valir sat on a stand on the table. Below it, the ruby in the hilt of the ornate dagger caught the light. Matt darted to the table, snatching horn and dagger.
"We have it," he crowed, shaking the dagger in his fist. "We have both of them." "Not so loud," Perrin said with a wince. "We don't have them out of here yet."
His hands were busy on the haft of his axe. They seemed to want to be holding something else.
"The Horn of Valir."
There was sheer awe in Ingtar's voice. He touched the horn hesitantly, tracing a finger along the silver script inlaid around the bell, and mouthing the translation, then pulled his hand back with a shiver of excitement.
"It is. By the light it is. I am saved."
Huron was moving the screens that hid the windows. He shoved the last one out of his way and peered into the street below.
"Those soldiers are all still there, looking like they've took root."
He shuddered.
"Those things, too."
Rand went to join him. The two beasts were Grom. There was no denying it.
"How did they?"
As he lifted his eyes from the street, words died. He was looking over a wall into the garden of the big house across the street. He could see where further walls had been torn down, joining other gardens to it. Women sat on benches there or strolled along the walks, always in pairs. Women linked, neck to wrist, by silver leashes. One of the women with a collar around her neck looked up. He was too far to make out her face clearly, but for an instant it seemed that their eyes met, and he knew. The blood drained from his face.
"Egwene," he breathed. "What are you talking about?" Matt said. "Egwene is safe in Tarvalin. I wish I were." "She's here," Rand said.
The two women were turning, walking toward one of the buildings on the far side of the joined gardens.
"She is there, right across the street. Oh, light, she's wearing one of those collars."
"Are you sure?" Perrin said. He came to peer from the window.
"I don't see her, Rand, and I could recognize her if I did, even at this distance." "I am sure," Rand said.
The two women disappeared into one of the houses that faced the next street over. His stomach was twisted into a knot.
"She is supposed to be safe. She's supposed to be in the White Tower.
I have to get her out. The rest of you."
"So..."
The slurring voice was as soft as the sound of the doors sliding in their tracks.
"You are not who I expected."
For a brief moment, Rand stared. The tall man with the shaven head who had stepped into the room wore a long trailing blue robe, and his fingernails were so long that Rand wondered if he could handle anything. The two men standing obsequiously behind him had only half their dark hair shaved, the rest hanging in a dark braid down each man's right cheek. One of them cradled a sheathed sword in his arms. It was only a moment he had for staring, then screens toppled to reveal at either end of the room a doorway crowded with four or five Shanshan soldiers, bareheaded but armored, and swords in hand.
"You are in the presence of the High Lord Turok,"
the man who carried the sword began, staring at Rand and the others angrily, but a brief motion of a finger with a blue lacquered nail cut him short. The other servant stepped forward with a bow and began undoing Turok's robe.
"When one of my guards was found dead," the shaven-headed man said calmly, "I suspected the man who calls himself Fane. I have been suspicious of him since Juan died so mysteriously, and he has always wanted that dagger."
He held out his arms for the servant to remove his robe. Despite his soft, almost singing voice,
Hard muscles roped his arms and smooth chest, which was bare to a blue sash holding wide white trousers that seemed made of hundreds of pleats. He sounded uninterested and indifferent to the blades in their hands.
"And now to find strangers with not only the dagger, but the horn. It will please me to kill one or two of you for disturbing my morning. Those who survive will tell me of who you are and why you came."
He stretched out a hand without looking. The man with the scabbarded sword laid the hilt in the hand and drew the heavy curved blade.
"I would not have the horn damaged."
Turok gave no other signal, but one of the soldiers stalked into the room and reached for the horn. Rand did not know whether he should laugh or not. The man wore armor, but his arrogant face seemed as oblivious to their weapons as Turok was. Matt put an end to it. As the Shonchan reached out his hand, Matt slashed it with the ruby-hilted dagger. With a curse, the soldier leaped back, looking surprised. And then he screamed. It chilled the room, held everyone where they stood in astonishment. The trembling hand he held up in front of his face was turning black, darkness creeping outwards from the bleeding gash that crossed his palm. He opened his mouth wide and howled, clawing at his arm, then his shoulder. Kicking, jerking, he toppled to the floor, thrashing on the silken carpet, shrieking as his face grew black and his dark eyes bulged like overripe plums, until a dark, swollen tongue gagged him. He twisted, choking raggedly, heels drumming, and did not move again. Every bit of his exposed flesh was black as putrid pitch and looked ready to burst at a touch. Matt licked his lips and swallowed. His grip shifted uneasily on the dagger. Even Turok stared, open-mouthed.
"You see," Ingtar said softly, "we are no easy meat."
Suddenly he leaped over the corpse, toward the soldiers still goggling at what was left of the man who had stood at their shoulders only moments before.
"Chenoa," he cried, "follow me!"
Huron leaped after him, and the soldiers fell back before them, the sounds of steel on steel rising. The Shonchan at the other end of the room started forward as Ingtar moved, but then they were falling back too, before Matt's thrusting dagger, even more than from the axe Perrin swung with wordless snarls. In the space of heartbeats, Rand stood alone, facing Turok, who held his blade upright before him. His moment of shock was gone. His eyes were sharp on Rand's face. The black and swollen body of one of his soldiers might as well not have existed. It did not seem to exist for the two servants either, any more than Rand and his sword existed, or the sounds of fighting, fading now from the rooms to either side, out into the house. The servants had begun calmly folding Turok's robe as soon as the High Lord took his sword, and had not looked up even for the dead soldier's shrieks. Now they knelt beside the door and watched with impassive eyes.
"I suspected it might come to you and me."
Turok spun his blade easily, a full circle one way, then the other, his long-nailed fingers moving delicately on the hilt. His fingernails did not seem to hamper him at all.
"You are young. Let us see what is required to earn the heron on this side of the ocean."
Suddenly, Rand saw. Standing tall on Turok's blade was a heron. With the little training he had, he was face to face with a real blade master. Hastily, he tossed the fleece-lined cloak aside, ridding himself of weight and encumbrance. Turok waited. Rand desperately wanted to seek the void. It was plain he would need every shred of ability he could muster, and even then his chances of leaving the room alive would be small. He had to leave alive. Egwene was almost close enough for him to shout to her, and he had to free her somehow. But Sidene waited in the void. The thought made his heart leap with eagerness at the same time that it turned his stomach. But just as close as Egwene were those other women. Damani. If he touched Sidene, and if he could not stop himself channeling, they would know, Varen had told him. Know and wonder. So many so close. He might survive Turok only to die facing Damani. And he could not die before Egwene was free. Rand raised his blade. Turok glided toward him on silent feet. Blade rang on blade like hammer on anvil. From the first, it was clear to Rand that the man was testing him, pushing only hard enough to see what he could do, then pushing a little harder, then just a little harder still.
It was quick wrists and quick feet that kept Rand alive as much as skill. Without the void, he was always half a heartbeat behind. The tip of Turok's heavy sword made a stinging trench just under his left eye. A flap of coat sleeve hung away from his shoulder, the darker for being wet. Under a neat slash beneath his right arm, precise as a tailor's cut, he could feel warm dampness spreading down his ribs. There was disappointment on the High Lord's face. He stepped back with a gesture of disgust.
"Where did you find that blade, boy? Or do they here truly award the heron to those no more skilled than you? No matter. Make your peace. It is time to die."
He came on again. The void enveloped Rand. Sidene flowed toward him, glowing with the promise of the One Power, but he ignored it. It was no more difficult than ignoring a barbed thorn twisting in his flesh. He refused to be filled with the power, refused to be one with the male half of the true source. He was one with the sword in his hands, one with the floor beneath his feet, one with the walls, one with Turok. He recognized the forms the High Lord used. They were a little different from what he had been taught, but not enough. The swallow takes flight met parting the silk. Moon on the water met the wood grouse dances. Ribbon in the air met stones falling from the cliff. They moved about the room as in a dance, and their music was steel against steel. Disappointment and disgust faded from Turok's dark eyes, replaced by surprise, then concentration. Sweat appeared on the High Lord's face as he pressed Rand harder. Lightning of three prongs met leaf on the breeze. Rand's thoughts floated outside the void, apart from himself, hardly noticed. It was not enough. He faced a blade master, and with the void and every ounce of his skill, he was barely managing to hold his own. Barely. He had to end it before Turok finally did.
"Sidene, no. Sometimes it is necessary to sheathe the sword in your own flesh."
But that would not help Egwene either. He had to end it now. Now. Turok's eyes widened as Rand glided forward. So far, he had only defended. Now he attacked all out. The boar rushes down the mountain. Every movement of his blade was an attempt to reach the High Lord. Now all Turok could do was retreat and defend, down the length of the room, almost to the door. In an instant, while Turok still tried to face the boar, Rand charged. The river undercuts the bank. He dropped to one knee, blade slashing across. He did not need Turok's gasp or the feel of resistance to his cut to know. He heard two thumps and turned his head, knowing what he would see. He looked down the length of his blade, wet and red, to where the High Lord lay, sword tumbled from his limp hand, a dark dampness staining the birds woven in the carpet under his body. Turok's eyes were still open, but already filmed with death. The void shook. He had faced Trollocs before, faced Shadowspawn. Never before had he confronted a human being with a sword, except in practice or bluff.
"I just killed a man."
The void shook, and Sidene tried to fill him. Desperately, he clawed free, breathing hard as he looked around. He gave a start when he saw the two servants still kneeling beside the door. He had forgotten them, and now he did not know what to do about them. Neither man appeared armed, yet all they had to do was shout. They never looked at him or at each other. Instead, they stared silently at the High Lord's body. They produced daggers from under their robes, and he tightened his grip on the sword, but each man placed the point to his own breast.
"From birth to death," they intoned in unison, "I serve the blood,"
and plunged the daggers into their own hearts. They folded forward almost peacefully, heads to the floor as if bowing deeply to their lord. Rand stared at them in disbelief.
"Mad," he thought.
"Maybe I will go mad, but they already were."
He was getting to his feet shakily when Ingtar and the others came running back. They all bore nicks and cuts. The leather of Ingtar's coat was stained in more than one place. Matt still had the horn and his dagger, its blade darker than the ruby in its hilt. Perrin's axe was red, too, and he looked as if he might be sick at any moment.
"You dealt with them?" Ingtar said, looking at the bodies. "Then we're done, if no alarm is given. Those fools never cried for help, not once."
"I will see if the guards heard anything," Hiren said,
and darted for the window. Matt shook his head.
Rand, these people are crazy. I know I've said that before, but these people really are. Those servants...
Rand held his breath, wondering if they had all killed themselves. Matt said,
"Whenever they saw us fighting, they fell on their knees, put their faces to the floor, and wrapped their arms around their heads. They never moved or cried out, never tried to help the soldiers or give an alarm. They're still there, as far as I know."
"I would not count on them staying on their knees," Ingtar said dryly. "We are leaving now, as fast as we can run."
"You go,"
Rand said. "Egwene,
you fool!" Ingtar snapped. "We have what we came for, the Horn of Valir, the hope of salvation. What can one girl count, even if you love her, alongside the Horn and what it stands for? The Dark One can have the Horn for all I care. What is finding the Horn count if I abandon Egwene to this? If I did that, the Horn couldn't save me. The Creator couldn't save me. I would damn myself."
Ingtar stared at him, his face unreadable.
"You mean that exactly, don't you?"
"Something's happening out there," Huron said urgently.
"A man just came running up, and they're all milling like fish in a bucket. Wait, the officer is coming inside." "Go,"
Ingtar said. He tried to take the Horn, but Matt was already running. Rand hesitated, but Ingtar grabbed his arm and pulled him into the hall. The others were streaming after Matt. Perrin only gave Rand one pained look before he went.
"You cannot save the girl if you stand here and die."
He ran with them. Part of him hated himself for running, but another part whispered,
"I'll come back. I'll free her somehow."
By the time they reached the bottom of the narrow, winding staircase, he could hear a man's deep voice raised in the front part of the house, angrily demanding that someone stand up and speak. A serving girl in her nearly transparent robe knelt at the bottom of the stairs, and a gray-haired woman, all in white wool, with a long, flowery apron, knelt by the kitchen door. They were both exactly as Matt had described, faces to the floor and arms wrapped around their heads, and they did not stir a hair as Rand and the others hurried by. He was relieved to see the motions of breathing. They crossed the garden at a dead run, climbing over the back wall rapidly. Ingtar cursed when Matt tossed the Horn of Valir ahead of him and tried again to take it when he dropped outside, but Matt snatched it up with a quick, "It isn't even scratched," and scampered up the alley. More shouts rose from the house they had just left. A woman screamed, and someone began tolling a gong.
"I will come back for her, somehow."
Rand sped after the others as fast as he could.
Chapter 46. To Come Out of the Shadow. Nynaeve and the others heard distant shouts as they approached the buildings where the Damani were housed. The crowds were beginning to pick up, and there was a nervousness to the people in the street, an extra quickness to their step, an extra wariness in the way they glanced past Nynaeve in her lightning-paneled dress and the woman she held by a silver leash. Shifting her bundle nervously, Elaine peered toward the noise of shouts one street over where the golden hawk, clutching lightning, rippled in the wind. "What is happening?" "Nothing to do with us," Nynaeve said firmly. "You hope," Min added, "and so do I." She increased her pace, hurrying up the steps ahead of the others, and disappeared inside the tall stone house. Nynaeve shortened her grip on the leash. "Remember, Sita, you want us to make it through this safely as much as we do."
"I do,"
the Shan Shan woman said fervently. She kept her chin on her chest to hide her face.
"I will cause you no trouble, I swear."
As they turned up the gray stone steps, a Suldam and a Damani appeared at the head of the stairs, coming down as they went up. After one glance to make sure the woman in the collar was not Egwene, Nynaeve did not look at them again. She used the Eidam to keep Sita close by her side, so if the Damani sensed the ability to channel in one of them, she would think it was Sita. She felt sweat trickling down her spine, though, until she realized they were paying her no more attention than she gave them. All they saw was a dress with lightning panels and a gray dress, the women wearing them linked by the silver length of an Eidam. Just another leash holder with a leashed one, and a local girl hurrying along behind with a bundle belonging to the Suldam. Nynaeve pushed open the door and they went in. Whatever the excitement beneath Turak's banner, it did not extend here, not yet. There were only women moving about in the entry hall, all easily placed by their dress. 3 gray-dressed Damani with Suldam wearing the bracelets. 2 women in dresses paneled with forked lightning stood talking, and 3 crossed the hall alone. 4 dressed like men in plain dark woolens hurried on their way with trays. Min stood waiting down the entry hall when they went in. She glanced at them once, then started deeper into the house. Nynaeve guided Sita down the hall after Min, with Elaine scurrying along in their wake. No one gave them a second glance, it seemed to Nynaeve, but she thought the trickle of sweat down her backbone might become a river soon. She kept Sita moving quickly, so no one would have a chance for a good look, or worse, a question. With her eyes fixed on her toes, Sita needed so little urging that Nynaeve thought she would have been running, if not for the physical restraint of the leash. Near the back of the house, Min took a narrow stairs that spiraled upwards. Nynaeve pushed Sita up it ahead of her, all the way to the 4th floor. The ceilings were low there, the halls empty and silent, except for the soft sounds of weeping. Weeping seemed to fit the air of the chilly halls. "This place," Elaine began, then shook her head. "It feels..." "Yes, it does," Nynaeve said grimly. She glared at Sita, who kept her face down. A pallor of fear made the Shan Chan woman's skin paler than it was normally. Wordlessly, Min opened a door and went in, and they followed. The room beyond had been divided into smaller rooms by roughly made wooden walls with a narrow hallway running to a window. Nynaeve crowded after Min as she hurried to the last door on the right and pushed in. A slender, dark-haired girl in gray sat at a small table with her head resting on folded arms, but even before she looked up, Nynaeve knew it was Egwene. A ribbon of shining metal ran from the silver collar around Egwene's neck to a bracelet hanging on a peg on the wall. Her eyes widened at the sight of them, her mouth working silently. As Elaine closed the door, Egwene gave a sudden giggle and pressed her hands to her mouth to stifle it. The tiny room was more than crowded with all of them in it. "I know I'm not dreaming," she said in a quivering voice. "Because if I was dreaming, you'd be Rand and Galad on tall stallions." "I have been dreaming. I thought Rand was here. I couldn't see him, but I thought..." Her voice trailed off. "If you'd rather wait for them," Min said dryly. "Oh, no. No, you are all beautiful. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Where did you come from? How did you do it? That dress, Nynaeve, and the eyedam, and who is..." She gave an abrupt squeak. "That's Sita! How..." Her voice hardened so that Nynaeve barely recognized it. "I'd like to put her in a pot of boiling water." Sita had her eyes squeezed shut, and her hands clutched her skirts. She was trembling. "What have they done to you?" Elaine exclaimed. "What could they do to make you want something like that?" Egwene never took her eyes off the Shan Chan woman. "I'd like to make her feel it. That's what she did to me. Made me feel like I was neck deep in..." She shuddered. "You do not know what it is like wearing one of these, Elaine. You don't know what they can do to you. I can never decide whether Sita is worse than Rena, but they're all hateful." "I think I know," Nynaeve said quietly. She could feel the sweat soaking Sita's skin, the cold tremors that shook her limbs. The yellow-haired Shan Chan was terrified. It was all she could do not to make Sita's terrors come true then and there. "Can you take this off of me?" Egwene asked, touching the collar. "You must be able to if you could put that one on." Nynaeve channeled a pinpoint trickle. The collar on Egwene's neck provided anger enough, and if it had not, Sita's fear, the knowledge of how deserved it truly was, and her own knowledge of what she wanted to do to the woman would have done it. The collar sprang open and fell away from Egwene's throat. With an expression of wonder, Egwene touched her neck. "Put on my dress and coat," Nynaeve told her. Elaine was already unbundling the clothes on the bed. "We will walk out of here and no one will even notice you." She considered holding her contact with Saidar. She was certainly angry enough, and it felt so wonderful, but reluctantly she let it go. This was the one place in Falma where there was no chance of a Soldam and Damani coming to investigate if they sensed someone channeling, but they would certainly do so if a Damani saw a woman she thought was a Soldam with the glow of channeling around her. I don't know why you aren't gone already. Alone here, even if you could not figure out how to get that thing off you, you could have just picked it up and run. As Min and Elaine hurriedly helped her change into Nynaeve's old dress, Egwene explained about moving the bracelet from where a Soldam left it, and how channeling made her sick unless a Soldam wore the bracelet. Just that morning, she had discovered how the collar could be opened without the power, and found that touching the catch with the intention of opening it made her hand knot into uselessness. She could touch it as much as she wanted so long as she did not think of undoing the catch. The merest hint of that, though, and Nynaeve felt sick herself. The bracelet on her wrist made her sick. It was too horrible. She wanted it off her wrist before she learned more about Aedam, before she perhaps learned something that would make her feel soiled forever for having worn it. Unfastening the silver cuff, she pulled it loose, snapped it closed, and hung it on one of the pegs. "Don't think that means you can shout for help now." She shook a fist under Sita's nose. "I can still make you wish you were never born if you open your mouth, and I do not need that bloody thing."
You do not mean to leave me here with it," Sita said in a whisper. "You cannot. Tie me, gag me so I cannot give an alarm. Please."
Egwene gave a mirthless laugh. "Leave it on her. She won't call for help even without a gag. You had better hope whoever finds you will remove the Aedam and keep your little secret, Sita. Your dirty secret."
"What are you talking about?" Elaine said.
"I have thought about it a great deal," Egwene said. "Thinking was all I could do when they left me alone up here. Soldam claim they develop an affinity after a few years. Most of them can tell when a woman is channeling whether they're leashed to her or not. I wasn't sure, but Sita proves it."
"Proves what?" Elaine demanded, and then her eyes widened in sudden realization, but Egwene went on. "Nynaeve, Aedam only work on women who can channel. Don't you see? Soldam can channel the same as Damani." Sita groaned through her teeth, shaking her head in violent denial. "A Soldam would die before admitting she could channel, even if she knew, and they never trained the ability, so they cannot do anything with it, but they can channel."
"I told you," Min said. "That collar shouldn't have worked on her." She was doing up the last buttons down Egwene's back. "Any woman who couldn't channel would be able to beat you silly while you tried to control her with it."
"How can that be?" Nynaeve said. "I thought the Shan Chan put leashes on any woman who can channel."
"All of those they find," Egwene told her. "But those they can find are like you and me and Elaine. We were born with it, ready to channel whether anyone taught us or not. But what about Shan Chan girls who aren't born with the ability but who could be taught? Not just any woman can become a leash holder." "Renna thought she was being friendly, telling me about it. It is apparently a feast day in Shan Chan villages when the Soldam come to test the girls. They want to find any like you and me and leash them, but they let all the others put on a bracelet to see if they can feel what the poor woman in the collar feels. Those who can are taken away to be trained as Soldam. They are the women who could be taught." Sita was moaning under her breath.
"No, no, no," over and over again.
"I know she is horrible," Elaine said, "but I feel as if I should help her somehow. She could be one of our sisters, only the Shan Chan have twisted it all."
Nynaeve opened her mouth to say they had better worry about helping themselves, and the door opened.
"What is going on here?" Renna demanded, stepping into the room. "An audience?" She stared at Nynaeve, hands on hips. "I never gave permission for anyone else to link with my pet, Tuli. I do not even know who you..." Her eyes fell on Egwene. Egwene wearing Nynaeve's dress instead of Damani gray. Egwene with no collar around her throat, and her eyes grew as big as saucers. She never had a chance to yell. Before anyone else could move, Egwene snatched the pitcher from her washstand and smashed it into Renna's midriff,
The pitcher shattered, and the Suldam lost all her breath in a gurgling gasp and doubled over. As she fell, Egwene leaped on her with a snarl, shoving her flat, grabbing for the collar she had worn where it still lay on the floor, snapping it around the other woman's neck. With one jerk on the silver leash, Egwene pulled the bracelet from the peg and fitted it to her own wrist. Her lips were pulled back from her teeth, her eyes fixed on Rena's face with a terrible concentration. Kneeling on the Suldam's shoulders, she pressed both hands over the woman's mouth. Rena gave a tremendous convulsion, and her eyes bulged in her face. Hoarse sounds came from her throat, screams held back by Egwene's hands. Her heels drummed on the floor. "Stop it, Egwene!" Nynaeve grabbed Egwene's shoulder, pulling her off of the other woman. "Egwene, stop it! That isn't what you want!" Rena lay gray-faced and panting, staring wildly at the ceiling. Suddenly, Egwene threw herself against Nynaeve, sobbing raggedly at her breast. "She hurt me, Nynaeve! She hurt me! They all did! They hurt me and hurt me until I did what they wanted. I hate them. I hate them for hurting me. And I hate them because I couldn't stop them from making me do what they wanted." "I know," Nynaeve said gently. She smoothed Egwene's hair. "It is all right to hate them, Egwene. It is. They deserve it. But it isn't all right to let them make you like they are." Sita's hands were pressed to her face. Rena touched the collar at her throat disbelievingly with a shaking hand. Egwene straightened, brushing her tears away quickly. "I'm not. I am not like them." She almost clawed the bracelet off of her wrist and threw it down. "I'm not. But I wish I could kill them." "They deserve it." Min was staring grimly at the two Suldam. "Rand would kill someone who did a thing like that," Elaine said. She seemed to be steeling herself. "I am sure he would." "Perhaps they do," Nynaeve said. "And perhaps he would. But men often mistake revenge and killing for justice. They seldom have the stomach for justice." She had often sat in judgment with the women's circle. Sometimes men came before them, thinking women might give them a better hearing than the men of the village council, but men always thought they could sway the decision with eloquence or pleas for mercy. The women's circle gave mercy where it was deserved, but justice always, and it was the wisdom who pronounced it. She picked up the bracelet Egwene had discarded and closed it. "I would free every woman here if I could, and destroy every last one of these. But since I cannot..." She slipped the bracelet over the same peg that held the other one, then addressed herself to the Suldam. "Not leash-holders any longer," she told herself. "Perhaps, if you are very quiet, you'll be left alone here long enough to manage to remove the collars. The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and it may be that you've done enough good to counterbalance the evil you have done, enough that you will be allowed to remove them. If not, you will be found eventually. And I think whoever finds you will ask a great many questions before they remove those collars. I think perhaps you will learn at first hand the life you have given to other women." "That is justice," she added to the others. Rena wore a fixed stare of horror. Sita's shoulders shook as she sobbed into her hands. Nynaeve hardened her heart. "It is justice," she told herself. "It is," and herded the others out of the room. No one paid any more attention to them going out than they had coming in. Nynaeve supposed she had the Suldam dress to thank for that, but she could not wait to change into something else, anything else. The dirtiest rag would feel cleaner on her skin. The girls were silent, walking close behind her until they were out on the cobblestone street again. She did not know if it was what she had done or the fear that someone might stop them. She scowled. Would they have felt better if she had let them work themselves up to cutting the women's throats? "Horses," Egwene said. "We will need horses. I know the stable where they took Bella, but I don't think we can get to her." "We have to leave Bella here," Nynaeve told her. "We are leaving by ship." "Where is everybody?" Min said, and suddenly Nynaeve realized the street was empty. The crowds were gone, not a sign of them to be seen. Every shop and window along the street were shuttered tight. But up the street from the harbor came a formation of Shan Chan soldiers, 100 or more in ordered ranks, with an officer at their head in his painted armor. They were still halfway down the street from the women, but they marched with a grim, implacable step, and it seemed to Nynaeve that every eye was fixed on her. That's ridiculous. I can't see their eyes inside those helmets, and if anybody had given an alarm, it would be behind us. She stopped anyway. There are more behind us, Min murmured. Nynaeve could hear those boots now. I don't know which will reach us first. Nynaeve took a deep breath. They are nothing to do with us. She looked beyond the approaching soldiers to the harbor, filled with tall, boxy Shan Chan ships. She could not make out spray. She prayed it was still there and ready. We will walk right past them. Light, I hope we can. What if they want you to join them, Nynaeve? Elaine asked. You are wearing that dress. If they start asking questions... I will not go back, Egwene said grimly. I'll die first. Let me show them what they've taught me. To Nynaeve's eye, a golden nimbus suddenly seemed to surround her. No, she said, but it was too late. With a roar like thunder, the street under the first ranks of Shan Chan erupted, dirt and cobblestones and armored men thrown aside like spray from a fountain. Still glowing, Egwene spun to stare up the street, and the thunderous roar was repeated. Dirt rained down on the women. Shouting Shan Chan soldiers scattered in good order to shelter in alleys and behind stoops. In moments they were all out of sight, except for those who lay around the two large holes marring the street. Some of those stirred feebly, and moans drifted along the street. Nynaeve threw up her hands, trying to look in both directions at once. You fool! We are trying not to attract attention! There was no hope of that now. She only hoped they could manage to work their way around the soldiers to the harbor through the alleys. The Damani must know, too, now. They could not have missed that. I won't go back to that collar, Egwene said fiercely. I won't! Look out! Min shouted. With a shrill whine, a fireball as big as a horse arched into the air over the rooftops and began to fall, directly toward them. Run! Nynaeve shouted, and threw herself into a dive toward the nearest alleyway between two shuttered shops. She landed awkwardly on her stomach with a grunt, losing half her breath as the fireball struck. Hot wind washed over her down the narrow passage. Gulping air, she rolled onto her back and stared back into the street. The cobblestones where they had been standing were chipped and cracked and blackened in a circle 10 paces across. Elaine was crouched just inside another alley on the other side of the street. Of Min and Egwene there was no sign. Nynaeve clapped a hand to her mouth in horror. Elaine seemed to understand what she was thinking. The daughter heir shook her head violently and pointed down the street. They had gone that way. Nynaeve heaved a sigh of relief that immediately turned to a growl. Fool girl, we could have gotten by them. There was no time for recriminations, though. She scooted to the corner and peered cautiously around the edge of the building. A head-sized fireball flashed down the street toward her. She leaped back just before it exploded against the corner where her own head had been, showering her with stone chips. Anger had her awash in the one power before she was aware of it. Lightning flashed out of the sky, striking somewhere up the street with a crash near the origin of the fireball. Another jagged bolt split the sky, and then she was running down the alley. Behind her, lightning lanced the mouth of the alley. If Domon doesn't have that ship waiting, I'll... Light, let us all reach it safely.
Bale Domon jerked erect as lightning streaked across the slate-gray sky, striking somewhere in the town. Then again.
There do not be enough clouds for that.
Something rumbled loudly up in the town, and a ball of fire smashed into a rooftop just above the docks, throwing splintered slates in wide arcs. The docks had emptied themselves of people a while back, except for a few Shan Chan. They ran wildly now, drawing swords and shouting. A man appeared from one of the warehouses with a Grom at his side, running to keep up with the beast's long leaps as they vanished into one of the streets leading up from the water. One of Doman's crewmen jumped for an axe and swung it high over a mooring cable. In two strides, Doman seized the upraised axe with one hand and the man's throat with the other.
Spray do stay till I do say sail, Edwin Cole.
They're gone mad, Captain,
Yaren shouted. An explosion sent echoes rumbling across the harbor, sending the gulls into screaming circles, and lightning flickered again, crashing to earth inside Falma.
The Damani will kill us all. Let us go while they're busy killing one another. They'll never notice us till we are gone.
I did give my word, Doman said.
He wrenched the axe from Cole's hand and threw it clattering onto the deck.
I did give my word.
Hurry, woman, he thought. Aes Sedai or whatever you be, hurry.
Jeff from Bornhold eyed the lightning flashing over Falma and dismissed it from his mind. Some huge flying creature, one of the Shan Chan monsters, no doubt, flew wildly to escape the bolts. If there was a storm, it would hinder the Shan Chan as much as it did him. Nearly treeless hills, a few topped by sparse thickets, still hid the town from him and him from it. His 1,000 men lay spread out to either side of him, one long mounted rank rippling along the hollows between hills. The cold wind tossed their white cloaks and flapped the banner at Bornhold's side, the wavy rayed golden sun of the Children of the Light.
Go now, Byr, he commanded.
The gaunt-faced man hesitated, and Bornhold put a snap into his voice.
I said go, child Byr.
Byr touched hand to heart and bowed.
As you command, my lord captain.
He turned his horse away, every line of him showing reluctance. Bornhold put Byr out of his mind. He had done what he could there. He raised his voice.
The legion will advance at a walk.
With a creak of saddles, the long line of white-cloaked men moved slowly toward Falma. Rand peered around the corner at the approaching Shan Chan, then ducked back into the narrow alley between two stables with a grimace. They would be there soon. There was blood crusted on his cheek. The cuts he had from Turok burned, but there was nothing to be done for them now. Lightning flashed across the sky again. He felt the rumble of its plummet through his boots.
What in the name of the light is happening?
Close, Ingtar said. The Horn of Elia must be saved, Rand.
Despite the Shan Chan, despite the lightning and strange explosions down in the town proper, he seemed preoccupied with his own thoughts. Matt and Perrin and Huron were down at the other end of the alley, watching another Shan Chan patrol. The place where they had left the horses was closed now, if they could only reach it.
She's in trouble, Rand muttered.
Egwene. There was an odd feeling in his head as if pieces of his life were in danger. Egwene was one piece, one thread of the cord that made his life, but there were others, and he could feel them threatened. Down there in Falma. And if any of those threads was destroyed, his life would never be complete the way it was meant to be. He did not understand it, but the feeling was sure and certain.
One man could hold 50 here, Ingtar said.
The two stables stood close together, with barely room for the pair of them to stand side by side between them.
One man holding 50 at a narrow passage.
Not a bad way to die.
Songs have been made about less.
There's no need for that, Rand said, I hope.
A rooftop in the town exploded.
How am I going to get back in here? I have to reach her.
Reach them?
Shaking his head, he peeked around the corner again. The Shan Chan were closer, still coming.
I never knew what he was going to do, Ingtar said softly, as if talking to himself.
He had his sword out, testing the edge with his thumb.
A pale little man you didn't seem to really notice, even when you were looking at him.
Take him inside Valdara, I was told. Inside the fortress. I did not want to, but I had to do it. You understand? I had to. I never knew what he intended until he shot that arrow. I still don't know if it was meant for the Amarlin or for you.
Rand felt a chill. He stared at Ingtar.
What are you saying?
He whispered. Studying his blade, Ingtar did not seem to hear.
Humankind is being swept away everywhere. Nations fail and vanish. Dark friends are everywhere, and none of these Southlanders seem to notice or care. We fight to hold the borderlands, to keep them safe in their houses, and every year, despite all we can do, the blight advances.
and these Southlanders think Trollocs are myths, and Murdral a gleeman's tale.
He frowned and shook his head. It seemed the only way. We would be destroyed for nothing, defending people who did not even know or care. It seemed logical. Why should we be destroyed for them, when we could make our own peace? Better the shadow, I thought, than useless oblivion, like Carolane, or Harden, or... It seemed so logical then.
Rand grabbed Ingtar's lapels.
You aren't making any sense.
He can't mean what he's saying, he can't.
Say it plain, whatever you mean. You're talking crazy.
For the first time, Ingtar looked at Rand. His eyes shone with unshed tears.
You are a better man than I, shepherd or lord, a better man.
The prophecy says, let who sounds me think not of glory but only salvation. It was my salvation I was thinking of. I would sound the horn and lead the heroes of the ages against Sheol Ghul. Surely that would have been enough to save me. No man can walk so long in the shadow that he cannot come again to the light. That is what they say. Surely that would have been enough to wash away what I have been and done.
O light, Ingtar.
Rand released his hold on the other man and sagged back against the stable wall. I think wanting to is enough. I think all you have to do is stop being one of them.
Ingtar flinched as if Rand had set it out. Dark friend.
Rand. When Varen brought us here with the portal stone, I lived other lives. Sometimes I held the horn, but I never sounded it. I tried to escape what I'd become, but I never did. Always there was something else required of me. Always something worse than the last, until I was... You are ready to give it up to save a friend. Think not of glory. Oh, light, help me.
Rand did not know what to say. It was as if Egwene had told him she had murdered children. Too horrible to be believed. Too horrible for anyone to admit unless it was true. Too horrible.
After a time, Ingtar spoke again firmly. There has to be a price, Rand. There is always a price. Perhaps I can pay it here.
Ingtar, I...
It is every man's right, Rand, to choose when to sheathe the sword. Even one like me.
Before Rand could say anything, Urin came running down the alley.
The patrol turned aside, he said hurriedly. Down into the town. They seem to be gathering down there. Matt and Perrin went on.
He took a quick look down the street and pulled back.
We'd better do the same, Lord Rand, Lord Ingtar. Those bug-headed Seanchan are almost here. Go, Rand,
Ingtar said.
He turned to face the street and did not look at Rand or Huron again. Take the horn where it belongs. I always knew the Ammerlin should have given you the charge. But all I ever wanted was to keep Shinar whole, to keep us from being swept away and forgotten.
I know, Ingtar.
Rand drew a deep breath. The light shine on you, Lord Ingtar of House Shinoa, and may you shelter in the palm of the Creator's hand.
He touched Ingtar's shoulder.
The last embrace of the mother welcome you home.
Urin gasped.
Thank you,
Ingtar said softly.
Attention seemed to go out of him. For the first time since the night of the Trolloc raid on Faldara, he stood as he had when Rand first saw him, confident and relaxed. Content.
Rand turned and found Urin staring at him, staring at both of them.
It is time for us to go. But Lord Ingtar
does what he has to, Rand said sharply.
But we go.
Huron nodded, and Rand trotted after him.
Rand could hear the steady tread of the Seanchan's boots now. He did not look back.